It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, you're listening to It's Going Down. We're going to be talking about a lot of things tonight. We're going to be talking about the uprising in Kenosha. We're going to be talking about the RNC convention, which ends tonight as we're recording this. And supposedly it's only going to get better from here, as they tell us. But things continue to get worse all around us, and we all know it. So let's just get into it. I mean, what's the big takeaway from the RNC? What does this tell us, if anything?
I think we need to start with sort of 2 points. And the first is comparing this to what happened at the DNC. And the second is talking about what happened even before the convention started. So if we look at the DNC, I mean, the DNC was definitely an attempt to sort of annoy Trump. It was an attempt to present him as weak, to present him as a failed leader, right? But the speeches were relatively articulate. They definitely weren't like screaming banshees into the void like you saw at the RNC. And there was sort of a hopeful vision, right? And it's a hopeful vision that we disagree with, but it's a hopeful vision, right? And they were presenting this idea of a sort of better America, right? An America that could move beyond its problems, or at least start the painful process of doing that, right? I don't believe a word of it, but that's what they were pitching. And it came across as a very hopeful convention, and people sort of came away from it not necessarily any more enthusiastic about Joe Biden or anything, but they came away from it feeling really good about themselves, right? Like feeling really good about their support. On the other hand, you go and start looking at the RNC, and even before the convention starts, the Republican Party comes out and says, yeah, we don't have a platform document anymore. We're just not going to have a platform. Now, every election, political parties pass platforms. Right. And those platforms are sort of aspirational, right? They're not really direct policy declarations or anything, but they do exist as sort of a statement of values, right? What the RNC was saying is our statement of values is that Trump is our statement of values. That is the only thing that we are going to support, and we are going to support that unquestioningly. And so essentially what the Republican Party was saying is our goal is to stay in power. That's what we're going to try and do, and that's the only thing that we're going to try and do. And that essentially means that they don't have any purpose anymore, except to just elevate Trumpism. The other thing that's really dangerous about that is a cult of personality, right? As a couple commentators from the moderate right, Jennifer Rubin and other people like that, said, this is the actual signal that they don't actually believe in anything except the power of the state with them in control. That is fascism. By definition, going back to Mussolini or in the Carl Schmitt mode, the state doesn't exist to do anything except perpetuate its own existence. Now, in this case, the state becomes Trump, and what they're doing is supporting that unquestioningly. And that makes them, by definition, a fascist party, regardless of the particularities of their politics, right? And that's really disturbing. But then the actual convention started, and what we saw was they talked about having this like very positive vision with this crazy stage managed show and a lot of people standing up at podiums screaming into empty rooms in ways that kind of looked really odd. There was this kind of roll call vote thing where everyone sort of looked really awkward. People like Steve Scalise were just making stuff up. Pence was just making stuff up. They were presenting the idea that essentially nothing went wrong with coronavirus. Nothing is wrong with the police. As Nikki Haley said, America is not racist. We don't have any problem with racism. We don't have to care about that. Which ironically, she then went on to tell a story about racial discrimination against her own parents. And they just kind of paraded people like the McClellan Muskies up there who have become sort of heroes on the far right wing. And essentially what they did was they just embraced everything that we would have said were alt-right talking points in 2016. I mean, it used to be articulated by people like Tim Pool and Cassandra Fairbanks and Richard Spencer and stuff like that. And they're not even really trying to couch it in the same way that a person like Lee Atwater would have couched it in the Southern strategy. They're just straight up coming out and saying it, right? And we've seen the effects of that. I mean, we saw the effects of that in Kenosha a couple of nights ago, where a kid, right, 17-year-old kid, who was a right-wing extremist, decided to shoot some people at a protest, right? And that's not entirely surprising, given the rhetoric that we've seen come out of the White House.
We've talked a lot about on this show where, I mean, like, you'll see people like Candace Owens basically saying the exact same thing that Nikki Haley did, which is, you know, racism doesn't exist anymore. There's no institutional barriers in place in front of people of color. Like, all of those things have been destroyed by the civil rights movement, the passing of legislation. So therefore, we live in an equal playing field. So now if you're complaining about racism, you're just some like liberal that wants a safe space and everybody has an equal fair share. We need to get off the Democratic plantation and go Republican because that's where the freedom is, blah, blah, blah. Again, I mean, all of these points literally come out of white nationalism in the 90s.
What's telling about that, and what's telling about the fact that the Republican Party didn't even bother to pass a platform, is not only that they've drifted overtly into fascism, right? They've drifted overtly into a position in which the preservation of their own power is paramount over any sort of actual goals for that. But I think more importantly, what sort of happened is they've also completely given up on the idea that they can speak to about 58% of the people that live in this country, right? That the polling that's coming out now is showing that the same amount of people that disapprove of the job Trump is doing is the same amount of people that are going to vote for Joe Biden. There's literally no gap. 538 was talking about this, and it's the first time in American history that's ever happened. And what that means is that there's almost no voters in play anymore. And so what the Trump campaign seems to be doing is, through a combination of trying to delegitimize the election and essentially turn their base into more or less a militia force to sort of encourage them and kind of rile them up, that their strategy essentially is to suppress as many people as possible while getting as many of their own people to show up. And that's always part of election strategy. But generally, there's still an attempt to convince people. There's still an attempt to win support. They have absolutely, fundamentally, 100% given up on that. And what they did was they presented a completely parallel reality, and then all their speakers spoke to that parallel reality. That parallel reality, you know, just for example, Steve Scalise saying millions of jobs were outsourced during the Obama administration. The actual number of job loss in total during the Obama administration was like 135,000. And that includes all the people that lost their jobs as a result of the financial crisis, which Obama was not even in office for the beginning of, right? Which is far less than millions. And so one of the commentators on NPR on the first night made a really interesting point. What he said was the Republican Party came into this convention talking about how they were going to talk about hopeful visions and things like that. And then they failed completely to do that, like utterly failed to do that. And what they did was they talked about carnage and failure. And that's a perfectly fine strategy when you're not in power, right? Because you can always blame it on the other people. But when you are in power, then not only does that mean that you failed to stop it, but it also means that you're at least partially responsible for it. And you don't really gain anything by convincing everyone that the situation is super awful. Because you're supposed to be trying to convince people that by you being in power, things are getting better. They did try and do that to a degree, but what they were presenting doesn't exist. So what they're presenting, for example, is a vision of the suburbs as totally populated by middle-class white families and so on. The actual demographics are that about 35% of the people that live in suburbs are people of color now. And it's actually, depending on where you live, really mixed income anymore. And a lot of people in the suburbs are actually really okay with that. And it's not the era of white flight from the 1990s. It's not, you know, you can't just play the Southern strategy to suburbanites and get them to be really, really, really scared of people that don't look like them, because suburbanites are now millennials. Right. And they're people that grew up in a much more diverse America than their parents did. And so you could scare their parents, but you can't scare them. And what's happened is that I think at the beginning of all of this, the media didn't really know how to talk about it. They didn't really know how to talk about Trump. They didn't really know how to address the just rampant misinformation that was being put out on sort of a systemic level. We've never seen anything like that before. And so the media didn't really know how to deal with it. And I think a lot of other people didn't really know how to deal with it. But now it's entirely transparent. And if you're not right in the middle of the right wing ecosystem, like media ecosystem, it's very obvious to you that what they're doing is lying to you, right?
Yeah, it's also this kind of like double ham-fisted thing where it's like Trump is like, you know, I've done more for African Americans than anybody else. And then in the same breath, it's like, you know, America's being burned down. You know, our cities are on fire. It's because of the Democrats that they're allowing the Antifa, Black Lives Matter Marxists to run riot and so on and so forth. So it's kind of this double thing, like, I'm actually the great reformer, but at the same time, if only we could get rid of these, you know, terrible insurgents, you know, that are in bed with the Democrats, then we could actually make America great.
Well, that's a problem that every strongman authoritarian has. I mean, you even see this with Putin, where on one level, they have to present themselves as infinitely powerful, right? That they can control anything, that if you just put your faith in them, that they can single-handedly make everything better. But on the other hand, in order to keep people loyal, you have to present risk. And that risk can't go away. And so what you're doing is you're saying, I'm infinitely powerful, but I'm incapable of controlling this thing that's threatening you. And at some point, that falls apart. I mean, we're watching that fall apart in Belarus right now, right? Lukashenko governed for years based on this idea that he was keeping foreign interference out of Belarus so people could live in this like socialist state, blah, 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 blah. And really, we have to worry about the like, you know, Western influence sort of spies and all this stuff. And eventually people really realized that not only were none of those things happening, but that there's a fundamental contradiction in that narrative, which is that the strong person fails to defend you, even though the reason you support them is because they'll defend you, right? We're watching people like Erdogan in Turkey lose support dramatically because of that exact dynamic, right? And so you can only perpetuate that for so long. And so one of the things that's happening inside of Trumpism right now is that there are a group of people that are really heavily grouping up around Trump and that are going to become very extreme in that belief, if they haven't already become very extreme. But as they're doing that, they're leaving the realm of logic that the rest of us operate in. And as they continue to move in that direction, not only have they essentially cut themselves off from the ability to build support, but slowly but surely, just given the demographics of his support base is literally dying off slowly. Right. I mean, his support base is just demographically baby boomers that are hitting their late 60s and early 70s. And yeah, I mean, you have some like millennial alt-right hipster types. But the reality is that that's a very small sliver of the millennial generation. You see almost none of that in Generation Z. Right. That the world has changed and passed them by. And what they're doing is they're trying to preserve a vision of a world that not only never existed, but to the degree that did exist, existed based on the back of incredible racism and extreme brutality, right? And this is one of the reasons that Mitt Romney lost when Mitt Romney was running for president in 2012, is that he was presenting a vision of an idyllic 1950s white America that didn't connect with most Americans. It wasn't an America that any of us experienced, right? And that, yeah, if you were white in the South, you might have experienced that. Or if you're white in Salt Lake City, you might have experienced that. But if you were working class living in a city, if you were a person of color, if you were an immigrant, that was not your experience, right? and people couldn't connect to Romney. And so Trump is doing that in a much more extreme version. And we're seeing the effects of that. People are not connecting with that and are drifting further and further away from both him and the Republican Party.
Yeah, and to your point about the strongman, he even said, I think before the RNC started, he said, you know, a year ago or, you know, 4 years ago, I said this thing and it sounded egotistical that only I can save it. He's like, but I was right. it's ridiculous. One more point I want to make, and I'll see what you want to say about this too, is that, you know, with the coronavirus, they basically went back and rewrote history and turned Trump instead of this person that was kind of like, that literally went from Tucker Carlson basically begging him to even take it real, to somebody that was like, you know, foisting conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, to somebody that begrudgingly was starting to even talk about it, to, I don't know, somebody that was like having like a feud with Dr. Fauci, like, you know, on a national stage, to somebody that was just so entrenched in fighting the coronavirus. And thank God we have President Trump to take such brave action. And they just presented him as that, which is, you know, again, if you're not in that bubble, who was going to believe that?
Nobody. And I think that that's actually the biggest takeaway here, is that the Republican Party has ceased to be a party that appeals to 58% of the country, and they don't care. That they are going to go this direction come hell or high water. And I mean, this is the problem. Like, when do you buy into something like Trumpism, which is based on deception and is based on grifting people and is based on scams and misinformation and racism? When you embrace that, you have a really hard time going back, because when you embrace that enthusiastically, what are you going to say? Oops, we messed up. Because then you look incompetent, right? And so what it seems like they've done, and you know, Trump has very intentionally stacked the Republican Party with people that are going to do this, but what they've essentially done is they have officially become the party of Trump, like literally officially, regardless of, and even in contraindication to, the fact that his support is absolutely crumbling along with the rest of the country right now. It is impossible for anyone who is honestly looking at the situation to say that the situation is good. Yet, polling that came out right before the Republican convention said that, you know, in general, 75% of Americans think that the country is, quote, headed in the wrong direction. 80% of Republicans think that the country is heading in the right direction. So when 80% of Republicans have exactly the opposite opinion of literally everybody else, what they have done is they have constructed an island for themselves. And then the only question, and this is actually where it becomes kind of disturbing and dangerous, the only question that they need to ask then is, can they mobilize enough force to stay in power? Right? And that is really what we're starting to see them try to do. I mean, we've talked about this in relation to Chad Wolf and the deployments to Portland. Trump is deploying federal agents to Kenosha, and we already saw them doing things like pulling people out of cars at gunpoint. It's terrifying. And they are constructing this reality of a social conflict that they are going to then try and leverage to stay in power. And the reality is that they're going to lose that fight. And when they lose that fight, the consequences are going to be incredibly severe. I can almost guarantee that. We're already starting to see it.
What do you mean by that? Just for everybody in general, or for?
Well, for everyone in general, yes. I mean, we're already watching. Okay, for example, pepper spray is sold out all over the internet. Gas masks are sold out all over the internet. 9mm ammunition is going for $1 a round. $1 a round. For comparison, for those of you that don't keep up on ammunition prices, 9mm ammunition is usually about 25 cents a round, maybe less, depending on where you're buying it. It's quadrupled in price in the last month. You can't even buy firearms anywhere. Things like helmets are just totally sold out on Amazon. I mean, it's insane. People are gearing up for a significant social crisis, and they're not wrong to do that, unfortunately. But the thing is that when the entire social context is sort of imploding on itself, it's really difficult to make the argument that what people need to do is just give you another term in office when it's very obvious to a lot of those people that you're the cause of this, or at least a significant part of the cause of this, that you have gotten your base to essentially just ramp up the racism to a point in which it is way more overt than it felt like it was before, even if that racism was incredibly present in everyday life. And it has turned what was a discussion about a changing America that involved, you know, crisis and critique and conflict and things like that, but in a controlled way, into an all-out direct conflict between different elements of the American populace. And those elements pretty much line up as Trump supporters and everybody else. And what we're seeing right now is that everybody else has a lot more power than Trump supporters do. What that means as far as how they respond is really the thing that's starting to become disturbing, because their response is violence. Their response is shooting people. Their response is showing up with shields and sticks and pepper spray and attacking journalists like they did in Portland. And their response is systemic misinformation.
We're seeing a pattern here, just as we saw a pattern in other instances. And the pattern here is that the state is essentially using these forces as kind of a quasi-deputized force to engage in certain things and using them basically as an auxiliary force in these demonstrations. And then when they're done, just kind of either tossing them aside or letting them leave and then coming in to do what it needs to do. But I mean, that's a very dangerous reality to live in. And we saw what happened. You know, this kid who's 17, Blue Lives Matter fanatic. I mean, literally all his social media is covered in Blue Lives Matter stuff. Rabid Trump supporter, was actually front row center at a recent Trump rally in January of 2020. I mean, he shot somebody and killed them, shot him in the head. And then he was chased by the crowd and a guy came up with a skateboard and tried to, you know, stop him. And he was shot and killed, and the shooter, Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, shot a couple other people. And then I'm sure, as people have seen, you know, walked into a line of police that were in like Bearcat assault tanks, and they just let him go. And then he fled, you know, he went home, and they had to go and find him and arrest him.
Yeah. Yeah. And none of that is surprising for kind of two reasons. I mean, one, America's deeply, deeply, deeply racist. And as Mike Gerben, the former FBI agent that we bring up on this show periodically, has written in a new report for the Brennan Center, the far right's been infiltrating not just police departments, but police culture for the better part of 20 years. And anyone that's been doing anti-fascist work for that long knows that. I mean, that's obvious. They talk about it really openly. It's not like it's a big hidden thing. But at the same time, what's also happening is We're watching a regime fall, right? We're watching the structure of American white dominance get challenged. We're watching people stand up in ways that were unimaginable before. And when regimes fall, the partisans of those regimes come out into the streets, right? And we saw this in Egypt. When the Egyptian regime under Mubarak wanted to, you know, kill a couple protesters and see if that would make them make people go home, they hired criminal gangs to do that. They didn't make the police do that, because if the police did that, then that would get people angry. So what they did was they started trying to stoke fear by kidnapping people and having them show up dead in the streets, right? They also did that in Syria. They also did that in Libya. They do that. I mean, this happens in Russia all the time. Like, just go and read about some of the things that have happened to Russian anti-fascists over the years, or Russian environmental activists over the years, since Putin has taken power. This is not particularly new. I think what's striking about it is, again, Americans have this perception that we exist in a world of very strong institutions that are supposed to be stopgap measures against this stuff. And what we have seen is that none of those mean anything. That if you are willing to mobilize your supporters to go out into the streets with firearms and convince them that the people that are out in the streets that you're trying to confront are communists who are trying to murder you, those supporters will shoot people, or they'll charge them with, you know, shields, or they'll throw pipe bombs at them. We've been watching it happen all over the country. I mean, it started in late May with Trump supporters driving cars into protests and hitting people with cars. It's happened at Blue Lives Matter rallies all over the country where police supporters show up and attack people at counter protests, right? I mean, this is not new. What is happening, though, is it's becoming more dangerous and it's becoming more frequent. And that's something that is very scary. The reality is, though, is that Kenosha marks something really important, I think. You know, when George Floyd was killed, a lot of people sort of made the decision that that was sort of a final straw and that they were going to go out and they were going to, you know, fight the state and they were going to undo American racism. And what happened is that a lot of those people that were coming out in the street were new. They didn't really have a lot of experience in politics, and the liberals were able to kind of push that into a space where they could control it within the realm of policy. But then Jacob Blake gets shot, and the video is just as graphic and just as clear. He got shot 7 times in the back. There's no way a person who is not facing you can pose a threat. And he got shot 7 times in the back at incredibly close range. And something broke when that happened, I think. The way that people are responding, I mean, yeah, there's riots and things like that going on, and there's looting and so on. But the position a lot of people have taken, I mean, you can see this with players in the NBA. They're just saying no. They're just not going to do it anymore.
Well, it's literally after 3 months of nothing changing.
Yeah, well, and you're starting to see, like, LeBron James, for example, just tweets out in all caps, "I've had enough," right? Or something to that effect. And then immediately starts organizing the players to just boycott the playoffs, right? That's the way, the speed in which they acted. And then the speed in which all the other sports leagues followed up is really staggering. It really shows that people that do have a soapbox, people who have the ability to really project messaging, people that have gone through these things. I mean, you got to keep in mind, like, LeBron James grew up in a low-income neighborhood in Akron, Ohio, right? And Akron is a deeply segregated Rust Belt city, just like Kenosha, right? There's no difference. In a lot of ways, I mean, Akron is sort of post-industrial and its industry has sort of collapsed. And, like, the only industry really left in Akron is Goodyear. Kenosha used to be an auto manufacturing town, right? I mean, Kenosha could be Youngstown, could be Akron, could be any of the cities outside of Pittsburgh, right? All of them have these deep, deep, deep histories of incredibly racist political structures that present themselves as progressive. Right. Political structures, which, interestingly enough, tend to actually be run by Democrats and have been for many generations. In those places, it doesn't particularly matter, though, because redlining is a much bigger influence. Right. Gatekeeping in industry is a much bigger influence. And so you grow up in a place like that, and you don't grow up with a lot of hope to begin with, because everything around you is failing. Right. And so something broke with Kenosha, I think. People really, I think it was this moment in which everyone said, okay, we allowed people to push us into reformism 2 months ago. It's not going to happen again. And yeah, are people going to go out and probably vote for Joe Biden? Sure. Yeah, they probably will. But I think that the idea that Joe Biden is going to enter office with any sort of legitimacy is a fiction. He's not. He's going to enter office as the person who wasn't Donald Trump. And for a lot of people in this country right now, it's not a question of whether you like Trump's policies or whether you like Donald Trump as a person. It is fundamentally a question of the fact that a vast majority of Americans consider Donald Trump an existential threat to their safety. And that is starting to be expressed not just in relation to Trump, but systemically. And we're starting to really see that emerge out of what happened in Kenosha.
So I think the idea then that the Democrats are somehow this, you know, body that's, like, allowing, you know, these riots to get out of control is just so silly. And not only that, but I mean, it also kind of, like, it begs the question, like, you know, what has Trump's strategy done, which is just, you know, totally inflamed the situation and probably made it worse.
Oh, easily. Yeah. I mean, it has definitely accelerated what's happening. Because you've got to think about it this way, right? For those of you that have not been involved so far, take it from someone who has. We're in a situation right now in which not only is the state failing, right, on an institutional level, not only have the police decided that, they're going to essentially wage war on our communities, not only is that rhetoric coming out of the White House, but that members of the far right are actively killing people, and there's no way out of that except to fight. And unfortunately, that has become our reality, right? There is no longer any space to even entertain the concept of pacifism right now. Even if you are inclined towards that idea, to take on that position is a threat to not only your own life, but also the lives of the people in your community. We have actually entered that kind of a space. And again, I've said this on the show before, but I never thought that I would see things accelerate this way. I never thought that there'd be a social situation in which armed gangs of fascists would be roaming the streets supported by the police and the National Guard and the Department of Homeland Security trying to suppress an uprising, which is caused largely because of the effects of systemic racism. It's astonishing to think about. Astonishing. Because generally what happens in the United States, and the American state is really particularly adept at this, is that politicians go on TV and they say, look, we understand your concerns. And, you know, we have all this wonderful freedom and, you know, you can organize in the political system and maybe we'll make some policy changes. And all you have to do is really just engage with us and please just engage with us. And that's exactly what Joe Biden is doing, right? He's going out there and saying, look, I understand the anger in the black community and I'm going to do what I can to help alleviate that. And he is taking the very traditional approach that politicians take in moments like this. And the reason that politicians take that approach is very, very, very simple. It's not even so much that they necessarily believe it. Right? I'm not claiming Joe Biden's lying to everybody, but that's not the primary question. What they are doing is they are de-escalating a conflict that they cannot control. And by doing that, they're allowing themselves to stay in power. And what we're watching right now is we are watching an administration who has pretty much dedicated itself to the mentality that de-escalating conflict is not relevant. And what they're going to do is they're just going to step on the gas as hard as possible and see what happens. In a country where there's 20 million guns, where there's a deep, 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 deep history of racism and genocide and colonialism. And the Republican Party specifically is stoking that flame. Tucker Carlson last night was saying, this is not a race war, this is a class war, which of course is ironic because, you know, the shooter in Kenosha came from a middle-class suburb outside Chicago, and the people that were shot were, like, mostly low-income people from Kenosha.
What was his argument that this is a class war?
There wasn't one. He just hyperbolically said it. It's Tucker Carlson. There's very rarely an argument. Because
right. This is the same person that just had that rich couple from St. Louis on and said they were middle-class.
Right. I mean, Tucker Carlson, you know, real man of the people, is supporting Donald Trump's argument about preserving suburbia from, you know, the hordes of people coming from the cities that are like broke and not white and so on, so on. So he is talking about racialized class structures, sure, but he's not talking about supporting the people that are the ones that are being victimized by that, which is what he always claims to be doing. What he is actually doing is very much the opposite of what he said. He is stoking a race war. And he is doing that for his own political gain, and he is doing that alongside Donald Trump. What we need to do as white folks in this situation is not just be allies, because allyship is fine, but we need to do more than that. We need to be active participants in this, and we need to listen to Black leadership in that process, and no longer be willing to sit on the sidelines under the guise of allyship. Right? It's not good enough to just post woke stuff on Facebook anymore. Right? It's not good enough to just go to a protest with a sign. We are dealing with a situation which is an existential threat, and we have to figure out a way to survive this together. All of our political differences don't mean anything right now, because what's happened is the American political situation has broken down into a binary conflict. And the only question in material conflict, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about Clausewitzian warfare theory or Schmittian politics or whatever, the only real question in material conflict is what side you're going to choose, right? And you need to make the decision. Are you going to choose the side of fascism, which has very overtly come into the open, or are you going to choose the side of anti-fascism, people who are going to fight back against that, right? You don't have an option to not be one or the other anymore. For all of you that sat on the sidelines and thought you could cut some sort of fence-sitting position, that doesn't exist anymore. The fence got burned down a while ago. So this is a time for everyone to decide. Everyone's got to choose a side, and everyone has to be both very cautious and willing to act in solidarity with people that are under threat, because we are dealing with a situation which is becoming incredibly dangerous.
Johnny, do you know the difference between a cop and a criminal?
One bad judgment call.
Justice! There isn't a shroud! No evidence! Nothing to prove! Corruption! Around every corner!
Well, just kind of piggybacking off that, I mean, we've already been kind of talking about it, but what does, like, for instance, Ann Coulter or Tucker Carlson essentially praising the shooter and calling for more, I mean, what does that say about the situation we're in? I mean, these are people that literally have advised the president, have a direct line to him. What do we make of this? Like, it's so strange that, it's not strange. I mean, you know, we live in this, you know, post-colonial settler state where there's just intense demonization of anything the working class, poor, oppressed people are doing. And this glorification of violence from, you know, white vigilantes and the far right. So what does it mean when they're literally coming out and saying, like, you know, this kid that shot, killed these people is
a hero. they're openly calling for civil war at that point. Like, literally, that is what they're doing. They're saying that it is entirely okay to be a white person, to pick up an assault rifle, to go to a city which is having a protest and to open fire on people. And that's an acceptable political action in their world. Because the reality is it always was, right? I think what we're seeing more than anything, and, you know, I mean, this kind of argument in theory goes back to arguments that the Red Army faction used to make in the 70s, where they would say, we have to rip the mask off the fascist state. We have to show the people of Germany that the Nazis are still in control, right? And in America, we haven't had that moment, right? Ever since the civil rights movement, the racist power structure in this country has always worn a mask, right? Ever since the undoing of Jim Crow, they've always tried to preserve that as much as possible. And they have done that through various different guises, tax cuts, funding cuts for schools, things like this, increasing policing, increasing the prison population, mandatory minimums, blah, 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 the war on drugs, right? All of those are an attempt to preserve the white power structure, and sometimes very overtly. But they've never come out and just said, what we need to do is we need to choose a side based on race, and we need to abolish the distinction between the state and the vigilantes, which is exactly what the right wing is doing. Nobody should fool themselves about that. I mean, we saw it in Kenosha. We saw the police talking to and encouraging the militia. We've seen it in other cities. We saw it in Portland, right? And in fact, that's been going on in Portland for years, right? We know that all over the United States, gangs of racists exist within police departments, right? You can find story after story after story of that. All over the place. It doesn't even take that much to find them. You just need to look, right? There's, you know, dozens of stories of Proud Boys that are cops and white nationalists that are cops and cops saying that they, you know, can't wait for, you know, vigilantism to break out because, you know, they want to take out some protesters. That culture of vigilante violence is a culture which has always existed as a part of the right wing. The KKK was very much a part of that. I mean, that is what the KKK was a way of enforcing white supremacy through vigilante violence, right? And we are watching vigilante forces come out and support what is increasingly an overtly fascist state, a state which is drifting into autocracy, a state which has literally no hesitation to systematically suppress the civil liberties of people in cities that they don't particularly like. A state which is attempting to invalidate elections and use that as a way to try and stay in power. And we are watching all of that happen right out in the open. You know, we don't have to speculate anymore. You know, I think for years, people that are slightly less radical than us constantly said, oh, this is overblown. You're, you know, being hyperbolic. You're, you know, being alarmist and things like this. The reality is that anti-racists and anti-fascists in America have been warning about this reality since the 1990s, right? What is astonishing about this right now is how fast it's accelerating out into the open. People like Tucker Carlson aren't even hiding it anymore. They're not even trying to talk around it. They're not even trying to couch it in populism. That's irrelevant now. They don't care. What they did is they chose a side, and they're fighting like hell to make sure their side wins. And they're willing to use cable news to do that. And they're willing to escalate social violence to do that. They're willing to put thousands of people in danger to do that. And at the end of the day, what is particularly sad for people that buy into that stuff is that people like Tucker Carlson and Ann Coulter and Donald Trump don't care about you at all. Do you think Tucker Carlson cares about the safety of some random dude in the Proud Boys? No. If that guy ends up dying in the service of Tucker Carlson's power, he doesn't care. None of these people care. And so all of these people on the right are finding solidarity in a community which doesn't have any. they're finding solidarity around a concept of race, which in itself is disturbing and dangerous and fascist. And they're doing that with the encouragement of, you know, not only the police, but the political class in itself at this point. I don't know what else to really even describe it as, except we are watching a critical turning point in American history happen right now, right in front of us. Right. We are seeing this sort of pivot point in history emerge in which our future is going to look very different depending on what happens right now. And that future, that direction of that future, has very little to do with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Right. They are people who are placeholders for not Trump. But at the end of the day, it's become increasingly clear that for a lot of people, getting Donald Trump out of power is incredibly important. And I'm not even going to be a person that disagrees with that. However, a lot of people also are now understanding that the problems that we have go deep down to the core of what we are as a country. And for Nikki Haley to stand up there at the RNC and to say America is not racist and then go tell a story about racism is delusional. It's just straight delusional. It flies in the face of the entirety of what we know about American history. And increasingly, a lot of people are starting to see the very same thing that we have been talking about on this show for years at this point, that to undo the racist power structure of this country means to fundamentally break down the American project itself. There is no option to preserve just part of this. That the end of the day, it all has failed us. And all of what we're watching happen right now is a product of that failure. All of the risk, all of the fear that a lot of us feel right now is a result of that failure. Right? Black people getting gunned down in the streets, whether they're by vigilantes or police, is a result of that failure. And there's nothing that we can do about that except to undo the failure. And that doesn't come through a ballot box. And if people want to use elections as a strategic move to sort of eliminate an existential threat, that's fine. I'm not going to tell people not to do that, right? I'm not a person who's particularly invested in voting myself, but I'm not going to tell people not to do that right now. But at the end of the day, I think it's become strikingly clear that that doesn't solve our problems. That reformism, when it has come to the police since 2014, has failed catastrophically. And nobody in a position of moderate political authority that has been pushing reformism has any legitimacy anymore.
Just to kind of close this out here on this discussion, I think the last question is, and we've already been talking about this, is how will all this stuff that we've been speaking of impact the election at all? Or are you predicting that essentially things will just continue as we've said, where things are kind of locked in, people are already going to vote for whoever they're going to vote for, there's no like kind of like, you know, loose votes up for grabs, and that the swing states are basically locked in, that they're going to go for Biden, and there's really no way to change
that? I think
because there's some articles that are starting to come out that's like, not so fast.
I mean, yes. Does Trump have an advantage on the level of, quote, enthusiasm? Sure. When you take the question of which candidate are you enthusiastic about? But what other polling has been showing is when you ask the question of, are you enthusiastic about this person or are you enthusiastic about getting rid of this person? The Biden camp actually has a massive enthusiasm gap. They're winning on that level, not because people like Joe Biden. Oh, I don't think almost anybody likes Joe Biden, right? But because people hate Donald Trump, and not just hate in the way that people hated George W. Bush, right? Because I think a lot of us had very strong feelings about George W. Bush, myself included, right? Very strong feelings about George W. Bush. But George W. Bush was dangerous. But George W. Bush was not riling his supporters to come out and murder you. And at the point in which that happens, sides get chosen. And I think what has happened right now is that people have lined up on whatever side they're going to take. No one's going to change their position at this point. It's impossible to not have chosen a side by now. I think the biggest question becomes, when he loses, what happens? Right? What has happened, I think, since George Floyd was killed, and specifically since Jacob Blake was shot, is that people have started to realize their power. I think a lot of people have started to really see this idea that if we really band together, we don't have to put up with this anymore. That there's starting to be a light at the end of this horrendous tunnel that this country has been in for 400 years. And that doesn't mean that we are getting closer to that light. And we will only get closer to that light if we are willing to be very persistent and very patient and very, very, very strong in our positions. And if we're willing to fight for all of that. But I think a lot of people are starting to see that we can actually do this if we are willing to push it far enough. That reformism isn't going to work. Reformism isn't going to save us. And people aren't voting for Joe Biden for Joe Biden's positions. People would vote for Joe Biden to get Trump out of office purely. But what that means, though, is that when this is all over, regardless of what happens, right, when Trump finally leaves, which will happen eventually, we cannot forget the lessons that we're learning right now. We cannot forget how much the reformists worked to preserve the foundations of a political structure, which is at its core the very problem. We cannot forget that the Democratic Party for 25 plus years has been pushing incarceration and increased policing. We can't forget that. That if we forget that, we forget that at our own peril, and we will end up repeating this cycle again 2 years from now or 3 years from now. This is what happened after Ferguson and Baltimore and Cleveland and Baton Rouge and Charlotte and so on. Is we allowed the reformists to take control of the conversation, and we allowed them to preserve the very thing that was attacking us, and to not take the action that they needed to take or get out of the way to let us do it. And I think what has happened now is that a lot of people are starting to see we cannot take the word of reformists to be legitimate anymore. We cannot sit around and just hope that things are just going to magically get different. We have to actively be engaged in fundamentally changing the way that we live, or this crisis, this tragedy that we are living in, is going to continue. And that tragedy is increasingly becoming contrary to our very ability to survive. And I think that is what people are starting to see with this election cycle right now, that the election is a step. Get rid of Trump, great. Okay, fine. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that Joe Biden gets legitimacy. And we need to remind them of that come January.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.